4:15, good afternoon to Bob and Ray.
And good afternoon to you, Roger, and hello again, everybody. We greet you from colorful Studio 2 today. Beautiful. We've thrown open the window wide to air it out, get some fresh air in.
Have some clean, fresh, brisk air in here this afternoon. It's going to add a great deal to
brisk
the next
New York
hour.
Air.
Yep.
And we have a full program arranged for you here on this Thursday, the 11th of March. We have a Bob and Ray was there. Those are always exciting when we relive a big piece of history.
What will it be today, do you know?
Well, I don't want to tip it off.
All right, okay.
It'll be coming along. Well, if you want me to.
No. I've got to wait in here. What time will that be on?
Bob and Ray invent the egg timer.
Oh.
Actually, Akbar the camel merchant invented it.
Oh, don't tell me anymore.
Is that enough?
That's enough.
Just enough to tease you a little bit.
Webb, you want to give us a little musical background for this first feature?
What is it?
Hard Luck Story.
Oh, yes. And again today, our scouts have been searching the railroad and bus terminals around our city here for victims of misfortune who need a helping hand from our generous Bob and Ray organization. And Bob, I guess that figure there beside you must be today's first guest.
Yes, he is. Ray, this is Mr. Walton Kelbo of Lincoln, Nebraska. And Mr. Kelbo, I understand you've come to New York in the hope of getting official permission to visit Communist China. You must be terribly interested in their culture to go to all that trouble.
Well, no, to tell you the truth, I don't care much about their culture. I don't like Chinese food.
Uh-huh.
And from what I've heard of their music, it's got nothing going for it at all. I'm just trying to get permission to enter China so I can meet my young daughter.
Oh, she's already over there, huh?
Well, not yet. She will be in a few weeks now. You see, she went out in our backyard about a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and started digging a hole to China. Now, of course, I thought she was horsing around and would be back in the house for dinner.
Sure.
But apparently, she was serious about the project, and judging from the amount of dirt that we've hauled up from the hole so far, I'd say she's within 100 miles of China right now.
So you want to go over there and meet her when she comes out on the other side, is that it?
Yeah, she's only 6 years old, and I think she might be kind of scared to come out in the country where everybody speaks a funny language.
Yeah, well, I hope the Chinese government pays special attention to your request, sir.
Oh, they're paying plenty of attention to it, all right. The spot where I figure my kid will come out just happens to be the exact location where the Chinese make their atomic bombs. So there have been several people following me ever since I filed my application to go there.
I imagine. That could lead to all sorts of interesting and unpleasant developments for you, Mr. Kelbo. But while your whereabouts are still known, we want you to have this lovely gift from our Bob and Ray organization, a lovely wicker dog bed complete with an eiderdown cushion.
Oh, now, gee, that's great. A guy going to China sure likes to know that his dog will have a comfortable place to sleep while he's gone.
Right.
Except, of course, I don't have a dog.
Don't try to thank us. That's the least we could do. Now, with another story, here's Mrs. Lottie Klinger of Chicago, Illinois, who is desperately trying to reach the Amazon jungle of South America. Is that true, Miss Klinger?
Well, from what I've read, the people down there are the only ones who have really perfected the technique for shrinking skulls, so I thought they could show me how to shrink my entire horse if I asked them in a nice way.
You have some reason to want to shrink a horse, do you?
Yes. Range is almost 20 years old now, and, well, I've become quite attached to him, but I recently had to give up my farm outside Chicago and move into an apartment right in town, and the landlord just won't hear of my keeping a horse unless I can make him about 10 or 12 inches long so he won't bother the neighbors.
Well, I'd say that trip to the Amazon jungle then is your only hope for reducing a horse to those specifications. And to help you make the long voyage, which you can ill afford, ma'am, our generous Bob and Ray organization wants to give you this room-sized sheet of linoleum in a lovely rosebud pattern from the friendly old linoleum store in Passaic, New Jersey.
Well, I don't know whether it's such a hot idea to put linoleum on the floor of an apartment where I plan to keep a horse.
Well, use it in good health. And a final hard luck story today will be told by Mr. Herbie Podoloff of Columbus, Ohio. Mr. Podoloff, according to your card, you've come here hoping that the New York Stock Exchange will help you solve a terrible business problem.
Well, yes, but I don't think the people over there can do me much good. You see, I was never listed on the New York Exchange, even when stock in myself was up around $80 a share.
You were selling stock in yourself?
That's right. I was a real go-getter when I was young, but I didn't want to wait until I earned enough money to buy a house and a boat and a car and things, so I sold stock in me. And you'd be surprised how many people are interested in owning part of another human being.
Well, actually, that doesn't surprise me as much as you might think, but I imagine you soon got tired of the business arrangement you'd set up, huh?
Well, no, it wasn't too bad at first. The stockholders were happy when I rose from box boy to assistant manager at the supermarket back home, and I went from $50 a share to 81 and a quarter. That was my all-time high. But then I got nabbed for pilfering sugar from the market when we had that big shortage a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And while I was in jail, I dropped to 2.5. Even now that I'm out, nobody wants to hire an ex-con. So I'm hovering right around 3.8. And the stockholders are all mad at me. I was hoping the New York Exchange could help me reorganize or something like that.
Well, it's very rare when a poorly managed individual like yourself goes back up in market value, Mr. Podoloff. But to make you feel better about your failure, our Bob and Ray organization wants to present you with this fine gift, a 14-carat gold watch chain that should look lovely if you ever get a watch for a vest.
Oh, gee, that's real gold. You better send it straight to my secret Swiss bank account before my stockholders can take it away from me.
Right. You're entirely welcome, sir. And now back to Ray at our main anchor desk.
If you've had it with winter in New York, you should know that spring is enjoying a continuous performance at Barney's International House. Right now, you can get a look at a whole continent of the newest fashions from every important designer in Europe and see which of their personal expressions reflect your own. It might be Bruno Piatelli's incredible whisper-weight flannel suits, or Carlo Palazzi's striped sport coats, or Yves Saint Laurent, Bill Blass, and Pierre Cardin's most recent ventures into vested suits for spring. You might even venture into an exquisite silk suit by Davenzo or Vanet. If you'd like a guided tour, one of our salesmen will make sure it's a pleasant one. If it's to be unguided, a just-looking button will make sure it's just that. So take a trip to where spring has already arrived, Barney's International House. You can go all through Europe and not see nearly as much European fashion under one roof. Barney's, 7th Avenue and 17th Street, free parking and free alterations. We're big enough to treat you as an individual.
Next, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. The story of America's favorite family of the Footlights and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. It's shortly after yesterday's episode now as Mary, Harry, Pop, and Calvin enter La Scala Opera House in Milan. Greg, already inside, is talking to the general manager about their forthcoming appearance. And as we join them, we hear Mary say,
This beautiful play.
It's truly breathtaking.
My. It's chilly, though, to be walking in here with a wet suit like I'm wearing.
Yes, does it seem to be drying out any, Calvin?
No, it's getting more clammy. You know, a big empty theater like this is kind of chilly.
Yeah, well, we won't stay too long. I did want to say hello to Greg and see how he's coming.
I'm getting kind of chilled. I could stand what? Oh.
What do you mean?
I thought maybe a bottle of wine to warm me up a little.
Well,
you won't get any wine here at the Opera House.
Maybe when we get back to the hotel.
Why don't you go outside, I thought you would say, and stand in the sun?
That's a good idea, but...
Why don't I do that?
All right, go ahead.
I'll stand outside the sun and wait till you folks come out.
Or you could get aboard the bus. He said he'd wait for us.
No, I want to stand in the sun and dry off.
Oh, I see. Good idea. Sure.
Yes, all right, then.
Well, we'll meet you out front, Will.
Sure.
I think Greg's over there in that direction, isn't he?
Should we go in, do you think?
Well, maybe we shouldn't interrupt him if he's
probably driving a hard business bargain right now, and I wouldn't want to interrupt.
That's right. At least we know what the opera is we're going to appear in, La Traviata, huh?
I don't think, looking here, that if I raised my voice in song, I could reach that second balcony up there.
Do you want to see if you can project a note back there?
Have to be louder than that.
It's about the loudest I can do.
Let me try. Well, you're not going to sing, Pop. You don't need to do it.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he will sing.
You think Mr. Barlow has me in mind for a role?
Sure he does. Too bad Calvin isn't here. He can sound a good note.
You want me to go get him and bring him back?
I'd like to hear what he sounds like.
Okay. Calvin!
What?
Step in here a minute.
All right.
Go over there and stand next to Harry and Mary and try a note. See if you can reach the second balcony.
Oh, are we just a regular note that I'd sing probably in an opera?
Yeah, just any. That's not bad at all. Give it a little more breath, though.
Wait a minute. Why don't you go up in the third balcony and see if you can hear us, Pop?
Okay.
All right.
I will. Take me a little while to get up there.
Yes.
And so our friends have their first taste of the atmosphere of La Scala Opera House. Tomorrow you ought to be here when Greg Marlowe makes a strange announcement. We hear him say,
"Well, it's all inked. We're all set to go."
That's tomorrow in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking.
There are two kinds of first-class service. First-class first-class and second-class first-class. As the Red Baron of Lufthansa German Airlines, I would like to explain the difference. Mine is first-class first-class. There is fresh orange juice, freshly scrambled eggs, fresh flowers, caviar, and you'll find at least 7 entrees on the menu. Just a few reasons many professional travelers call mine the best first-class service across the Atlantic. But I won't go into greater detail about them. There's a better way for both of us. Fly my first-class first-class on your next trip to Europe. You'll never fly second-class first-class again.
And now, through the courtesy of the Ash and Felder Whip Socket Company, we take you back to
August 7th, 3184 B.C. Akbar the Camel Merchant invents the egg timer. Bob and Ray was there.
"Hey, I got some nice low-mileage camels here. No reason to offer refused. Closing out all my used camels here."
"Hey, what's up, Akbar the Camel Merchant?"
"Oh, hi there, Ramsey the Water Carrier. Say, do you want to buy a good used camel at 50% off book value? It could carry a lot more water, expand your business."
"No, no thanks. I couldn't afford the upkeep on one of those big dromedaries. But how come you're closing them out at half price? Aren't you going to be a camel merchant anymore, Akbar the Camel Merchant?"
"Well, you guessed it, Ramsey the Water Carrier. I never liked camels anyway. They're mean and they're stupid. So now that I've got a surefire invention that'll take all my time to promote, I'm getting rid of the camels."
"Gee, I wouldn't be too hasty, Akbar the Camel Merchant."
"Hey, it's not Akbar the Camel Merchant anymore, pal. It's Akbar the Hourglass Inventor."
"The what?"
"The Hourglass Inventor. Right here, let me show you the prototype model I've already made up. Isn't that a beauty?"
"Well, gee, I don't know, Akbar the Camel Merchant."
"The Hourglass Inventor."
"Well, whatever. I still don't know. It looks to me like you were blowing glass to make a bottle, only you accidentally closed up both ends. And to make matters worse, the thing is full of sand."
"Boy, you're sure not much of a visionary when it comes to picturing the possibilities of new inventions. Can't you see the sand running through that little hole in the middle there? That tells me it's not quite 6 hours after sunup."
"Well, I know it's almost midday, but what's an hour?"
"Well, that's how long it takes all the sand to run from up here to down here. Does that 24 times in one day."
"You mean a guy has to have 24 of these things to figure out how many hours after sunup it is?"
No, of course not. When all the sand is run down at the bottom, you just turn the whole thing over and let the sand run back the other way. It'll revolutionize timekeeping. People will never be more than a small fraction of a day late for appointments."
"Well, that's assuming they stay up all night so they can turn this thing upside down every hour when the sand runs out. Otherwise, they'll still get up in the morning and not know what time it is."
"Yeah, that's true. Of course, I'm recommending that people hire servants to stay up all night and turn their hourglasses upside down every hour. It's a little expensive, but in my sales pitch, I point out it's worth the cost to be punctual."
"Well, couldn't you just make a bigger glass that would run for about 8 hours so it wouldn't need turning until people woke up?"
"Yeah, but it takes about 150 pounds of sand to fill up a glass that big. So you still need to hire a servant to help you turn it over, even if you're awake at the time."
"Yeah, I really hate to be a wet blanket, but I think it might upset our whole national economy if half the people stay up all night just to turn over other people's hourglasses."
"I guess maybe you're right, Ramsey's the Water Carrier. But I think I see how a different version of the same thing could still make me rich without causing so many other problems."
"Oh?
Now, if I made a smaller hourglass that let all the sand run through in just about, 20th of an hour, people could use them to boil a 3-minute egg properly."
"Hey, that's a great idea. Congratulations, Akbar. I knew you could come up with a practical invention if you just keep trying."
And so it was that the idea for an hourglass was put aside for another 1,000 years. while the egg timer came into existence instead. It all happened purely by chance, as the result of a conversation between two old friends one warm summer afternoon. And what sort of a day was it? A day like all days that alter and illuminate our times. The date?
August 7th, 3184 B.C. Akbar the camel merchant invents the egg timer. Bob and Ray was there.
Respect, the word that Pontiac taught the car business. Respect for great cars, cars like GTO, Le Mans, Firebird. And now there's a new Firebird, the sportiest of all the wideflats. A car with outstanding performance, superb manners, and surprising economy of operation. And a car your New York, New Jersey Pontiac dealer can deliver starting at only $3,906. Manufacturer suggested retail price. Destination charges, state and local taxes extra. Firebird. Maybe it's time. If you haven't talked to a Pontiac dealer, you haven't shopped for a car.
If you haven't talked to a Pontiac dealer, you haven't shopped for a car.
Okay, Bob and Ray, Webley Webster, you're probably the greatest boob and deterrent to mental progress been around, and you, Wally Ballou, you kind of fumble your way through, but you both can redeem yourselves and urge your fans to tune in Sunday morning from 8:15 to 12 noon when I, Peter Roberts, am on hand. Well, will you do it? It's right here on WOR, the talk of New York.
Isn't that exciting?
Oh, no, you shouldn't.
Are you going to take umbrage at that, Webb and Wally?
Well, the Peter Roberts Show is a festival of fluff.
What was that word he had trouble with a couple of weeks ago?
I don't know. But all kidding aside, though.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have nothing else to do on a Sunday morning, turn on the radio and listen to Peter Roberts.
Right, it is. It's a good morning picker-upper there.
I personally would rather sleep.
The publishers of Book Digest want to send you the current issue of this fine magazine on a free trial basis because they want you to be able to see for yourself what an enjoyable and entertaining magazine Book Digest is. Book Digest takes the hottest bestsellers and condenses them. After reading the Book Digest selections, you'll know in no uncertain terms what the book is about. And just listen to the books that make up the current issue. You'll read Trinity by Leon Uris, Muhammad Ali's revealing autobiography, new book by Billy Graham, and a conversation with Sylvia Porter, author of The Money Book. You'll read The Russians, the latest book reviews, interviews of famous authors, and more. This fascinating issue of over 200 pages is yours to examine free. After you receive it, you'll receive a bill for a full year's subscription for only $9. If you're not satisfied, just write cancel on the bill and keep the issue. It's that easy. Call 212-581-4200. That's 581-4200, and out of town, call collect.
And now, Search for Togetherness, a touching story of people just like yourself who struggle to find happiness in a small Midwestern town where the steel mill has been closed permanently. As our drama begins today, young Dr. Honeycutt is looking at x-rays in his office upstairs over the cafe where Agatha works part-time. And beside him, waiting anxiously, is old Mr. Kincaid, the town's biggest lumber tycoon and all-around millionaire. At last, Mr. Kincaid feels compelled to speak.
I don't like to bring this up, Doctor, but you've been studying my x-rays for a good 20 minutes now, and I assume you found something disturbing. I wish you'd tell me what it is.
Very well, Mr. Kincaid, if you insist. I don't like to bring this up, but you seem to have an extra bone in your rib cage that runs vertically right down through here. Now, that could cause you some problems in later life.
Well, I'm in later life right now, Doctor. I know that's a subject you don't like to bring up, but when a man reaches his 80th birthday, he has to face the fact that he's getting older.
Well, you show a lot of courage for a man who might guess to be well past 70. Unfortunately, there's no miraculous cure when one has a rib bone running the wrong direction. So just try to make yourself comfortable. And much as I hate to bring it up,
You owe me $125 for the x-rays.
Honeycutt, I don't like to bring Agatha's name into this. However...
Now, just a moment there, Kincaid. There's no need to bring Agatha's name into this. I merely said...
Just a minute, Honeycutt. I happen to know that you're pushing for payment of my bill because you're short on cash just now. And I don't like to bring this up, but Agatha is being seen around town in a new mink coat.
Now, just a moment there, Kincaid. Are you trying to say that... That town gossip would cause you...
Just a moment, Honeycutt. Are you trying to infer that I'd be guided by town gossip?
Well, I don't like to bring this up, sir, but you were the one who brought Agatha's name into this after I mentioned the bill.
Well, that may be, Honeycutt, but I've already told you I don't like to bring Agatha's name into this.
Well, I understand your point about that, but the fact remains that it's only a matter of $125. And much as I don't like to bring this up, it's common knowledge around town that you're a millionaire, several times over.
Just a moment there, Honeycutt. The figures you're quoting on my bank account are nothing but town gossip, and I don't...
Now, just a moment there, Kincaid. Are you trying to infer that I'd be guided by town gossip?
Well, I don't like to bring this up, Doctor, but you're trying to charge $125 for two poor-quality x-rays simply because town gossips have told you I'm a millionaire.
Now, just a moment there, Kincaid. What gives you the right to call my x-rays poor quality?
Well, I didn't want to bring this up, Doctor, but what you refer to as an extra bone running vertically through my rib cage obviously isn't a bone at all. You left your coat rack between me and the x-ray plate when you took that picture. See the hook stretching out on both sides there at the top?
I hadn't wanted to bring this up, Mr. Kincaid, but I have reason to believe that those things you describe as hooks are really extra skull bones that have grown into your brain. Now, those could cause you some trouble in later life.
I'm in later life right now, Doctor. I know that's a subject you don't like to bring up, but when a man reaches his 80th birthday, he has to face the fact that he's getting older.
I never think of you as an elderly man, Mr. Kincaid. After all, there's been considerable talk lately of your flirtation with the notorious Snyder girl. Of course, it's only town gossip.
No, it's a good deal more than town gossip, Doctor. I was hoping it wouldn't be necessary to bring this up, but the notorious Snyder girl and I were married last Saturday in a suburb of the state capital.
And so, old Mr. Kincaid finally admits that town gossip has been correct, much as he hates to bring the matter up. But what effect will it have on his marriage to the notorious Snyder girl once the word leaks out that Mr. Kincaid has a coat rack growing through his body? Perhaps we'll learn more in the next episode. Join us then for more emotion-packed drama on Search for Togetherness.
Greetings, the warmest of welcome, sports fans. This is Biff Burns, enunciating direct from Mike's side here in the Biff Burns Sports Room, where we have a guest of no small achievement here with us. He's the noted sports promoter, Gerald V. Huber. And, Gerald, I wonder if you could tell us right at the outset what you're noted for promoting in the world of sports.
Well, yes, I'd be happy to do that, Biff. Right now, I'm trying to promote my idea of holding Olympic Games in Montreal this summer. And if I succeed, well, that's the promotion I'll be noted for.
I certainly don't want to detract from your many prior accomplishments, whatever they may be, but I believe that some other promoter has already thought of the idea of holding Olympic Games in Montreal this summer.
Well, if you're talking about ordinary Olympic Games, I'd have to agree with you, Biff, but it'll probably take my Olympics to make the other Olympics possible.
Well, I think it might require some explanation on your part to clarify that statement, Gerald.
Okay, yeah, Biff. I was planning to begin that explanation right away. You see, they're having trouble getting the buildings and other facilities finished in time for the regular Olympics, so I'm negotiating with the World Brotherhood of Construction Workers to hold the Construction Workers Olympics in Montreal first. Get it? And that way we can help them finish their buildings while we're holding our Olympics.
I think it might require some explanation on your part to clarify everything you just said, Gerald. For example, I can't imagine what events you propose to stage at a construction workers' Olympics.
Well, I'm kind of surprised you can't imagine that, Biff, because the event's pretty much what the average person would imagine. We'll have competition in concrete pouring, bricklaying,
nail pounding, all that kind of stuff.
So in short, it's every conceivable competitive event that might test the speed and stamina of construction workers gathering Montreal from the four corners of the world.
Well, yes, I guess that might be your way of putting it in short, Biff. But from my viewpoint, though, fans will pay at least $2 a throw to watch the world's fastest construction workers compete. And when my Olympics are over, I'll have a pocket full of cash, and the Canadians will have all their buildings finished for the other Olympics.
Well, that seems like a most practical idea, except for a few things, Gerald. And I suppose the most impractical thought you're harboring is that fans will pay $2 apiece to watch construction workers finish building the Olympic facilities. I believe it's possible to watch construction workers work without paying an admission charge in most areas.
Well, sure it is, Biff, if you're willing to settle for watching ordinary sandlot construction workers. Well, I'm talking about presenting the best in the world. Have you ever watched the immortal Paavo Kluit and his colleagues on the Australian roof shingling team?
No, I don't believe I've ever seen Paavo in action. Of course, I've observed a few roof shinglers from time to time without knowing who they were.
You'd know it if you'd ever seen the immortal Paavo Kluit. He's poetry in motion, Biff. Sheer poetry in motion. Now, I've watched Paavo shingle 20 square feet of roof in 6 minutes flat. And he was the first to realize that the secret lies in holding all the nails in his mouth so he doesn't have to waste time reaching into his apron.
Sounds as if his shingling work is truly poetry in motion, Gerald.
Well, it is, Biff. It's sheer poetry in motion. And I'm sure the same could be said of the Brazilian plumbing installation team and the Norwegian aluminum siding nailer uppers. I've also heard some good things about a virtually unknown plastic kid who's been working out in the mountains of Bolivia down South America. But we don't have any official times on his performance yet, so I don't want to, you know, give him too much of a build-up.
Well, I'm sure it'll be an unforgettable experience for those in attendance if you're truly able to bring such a plethora of champions together in the same place at the same time.
Well, I still got to raise quite a bit of cash, Biff. You see, there aren't too many other, or too many amateur construction workers like you find in regular sports. That means that all of us get paid to come to Montreal to compete. And even in the most backward countries, a construction worker gets about $6 an hour. In the more civilized nations, that can go as high as 15 or 20.
Now, I can see how there might be considerable expense involved bringing together the most talented competitors from the four corners of the world. But I should think the people in Montreal would be vitally interested in any proposal that might enable them to finish their Olympic facilities in time for the Summer Games.
Well, I've already been up there, Biff, and I've outlined my full proposal to them. I told them that holding the Construction Workers Olympics in Montreal would get a month's work done in about 4 days. And all it would cost is approximately $9 million.
And what have the Canadians said in response to your proposal?
Well, they said that, in their opinion, I'm nutty as a fruitcake.
And that's about all the time we have here in the sports room. Thanks for dropping by to tell us about your idea anyway. And until next time, this is Biff Burns saying, until next time, so long, fans.
$750 million. That's how big and strong Astoria Federal Savings has grown to be. Big ideas are what have made Astoria one of the fastest growing savings institutions in the country. The Astoria idea is giving you the most for your money and paying the highest interest on your investment. It's the convenience of neighborhood service at 10 Long Island offices. It's Saturday hours for your weekend needs. And it's awfully nice knowing there's over $750 million behind you.
An idea designed to come through with many happy returns for you. The Astoria idea.
And now the Crutchford Brace and Tassel Company invites you to share another nostalgic interlude in the lives of the Pittman.
I sometimes wonder what enabled me to keep my cheerful outlook on life when I was a young boy growing up amid the prairie of Oklahoma. The Great Depression of the early 30s had gripped the country, and there was seldom enough to eat as the crops my father planted were buried under howling dust storms. And looking back over the span of 40 years or more, it would seem that only a fool could smile in the face of such adversity, and yet I smiled often as a child. One incident in particular stands out most vividly in my recollection. I can still see my father and mother as they were that day, seated around the dining room table, enjoying a cup of warm water. That was all they could afford to drink. And suddenly, I burst into the room, smiling with the innocent happiness that comes only in childhood.
Hi, Ma. Hi, Pa. I got some great news, and you'll notice that it's caused me to smile with the innocent happiness that only comes in childhood.
Well, yeah, I can see that, Jimmy Joe, and I know your mother's as anxious as I am for you to grow up and stop bothering us with your innocent happiness.
Oh, I know what a nuisance I am around the house, Pa. Today, I bring joyous news of how my undeveloped talent as a writer is going to make us all rich. See, I heard down at the general store that the state government is offering a prize of $100 cash to the person who creates the most flattering motto to print on our Oklahoma auto licenses. I guess the tourist business has fallen off a little since word leaked out that all we've got here is a dust bowl.
Well, I just don't know what to say, Jimmy Joe. We could certainly use $100 to pay off the mortgage on the farm and buy a new car and put away the rest for a rainy day, but I've always taught you children not to tell lies. Now here you're planning to write something flattering for our license plate.
Oh, I know how strict you are about not wanting us to bend the truth, Ma, so that's why I've been working on a motto that can say something nice about Oklahoma without dealing in specifics. You want to hear what I've written so far?
Jimmy Joe, I can see you got your head set on reading it to us, whether we want to hear it or not. So you go ahead and get it over with. That's the only way we'll ever have a minute's peace around here.
Thanks, Pa. Now, just imagine how this would grab you if you were a tourist reading one of our license plates. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains majesty above the... And that's all I've written so far. I'm not sure if more than that will go on a license plate.
Well, I think you came to your senses on that a little too late, Jimmy Joe. A license would have to cover the whole back of a car to include everything you've written so far.
Well, I thought maybe they could just print it in real small letters, Ma, and then we could encourage all our local motorists to slow down so the drivers behind them could get close enough to read what I wrote.
Well, I'm afraid that might lead to some accidents, Jimmy Joe, and the junk you write sure isn't worth having a person wreck his car just to read it. So why don't you tear up that paper in little bitty pieces and then get yourself off to bed, son?
Well, okay, if you think that's the best way to keep motorists from plowing into each other. Good night, Pa. Good night, Ma.
Good night, Jimmy Joe. Good night, Roy Boy.
Good night, Grandpa. Good night, Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands.
Ta-ta, Aunt Hortense.
Good night, Fay Ray. Good night, Chill Wills.
Good night, Baby Lucille. Good night, Jimmy Joe.
Good night, Ma. Good night, Four Horsemen of Notre Dame.